You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in. We're going to talk Razorback basketball today. Big week in the transfer portal. Some Razorback news we're going to get to with Anthony Christensen here in studio. I want to tell you that our podcast is brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with six times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com. For more information, we're also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. If you just found our podcast, will you check and see if you're subscribed? If not, please do so. You can do that on our YouTube page. Maybe you're listening on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, one of our social media channels. We appreciate you being with us. Subscribe, leave us a review. Tell us about what you think about the show. We'll get to Razorback basketball here in just a second. Razorback baseball wins last night 6-3 over fifth-ranked Georgia. That's 6 in a row now for the Razorbacks, and 4 of those have been against top 10 teams in the SEC. Of course, they swept Alabama last week in Tuscaloosa. They beat Georgia last night. Dare I ask if you have any thoughts on baseball, Anthony?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
You said you didn't watch last night's game.
I did not watch last night's game.
But you did watch Alabama.
I watched all of the Alabama series. You know, last night, you know, I remember what I was doing last night. You know, firing off some emails for some stories I'm trying to write.
But you're about to say fireworks.
No fireworks. But
there are a lot of fireworks out at the ballpark.
Their offense really seems to have started to
click. No, I'm talking about real fireworks. Real fireworks. Well, they were setting off real fireworks. Carter Rutenbaugh hit a home run in the seventh inning, and they had set off a bunch of fireworks during the seventh inning stretch. And Hank Layton, our photographer, actually has this great picture of a Georgia guy throwing, and he's like throwing underneath this like just haze of smoke. It's kind of a neat looking shot. So like when you watch Rutenbar's home run, you know, he looks kind of like he hits it out into the great unknown a little bit. Part of that's how far he hit it. It was like 404 feet off the top of the scoreboard. But yeah, they're shooting fireworks off last night and having a good time. It's a good win for Arkansas. You know, Joey Volchko was one of the better pitchers in the SEC. He just didn't have it in the first inning. But what we've seen with this team at times this year, and I think we're seeing it less and less, which is a sign of progress, is that they're making them pay for those bad innings. Mm. You know, it's there were a lot of times this year where they might load the bases and they don't score, or maybe they load the bases with nobody out or one out and only one run comes home. And you look at that and you compare it to what happened in the first inning last night. You've got Carter Rutenbar leads off with a 5-pitch walk, and then Ryder Helfrich has a 5-pitch walk, and then it's 2-0 to Cam Kozel. And, you know, I mean, the guy is clearly rattled. Volchko, the pitcher for Georgia, is rattled. And they made him pay. You know, I mean, there's a wild pitch. They move up. There's a sack fly. But the sack fly is hit in a place where the guy at second can tag and go to third. And then he's in position to score on it. And they're doing a lot of the really fundamental things a lot better, it feels like, here in the last 2 weeks. And they're being really aggressive on the bases, too. I mean, there was another double steal last night. They have stolen third base more in the last 2 weeks probably than in the last 10 years, maybe longer. It's amazing how aggressive they're being. And you look at one thing that really stood out to me that I looked up last night, Anthony, was that during the 6-game win streak, they're 17 for 18 stealing bases, including 5 for 5 the last 2 games.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the offense, like we mentioned earlier, it seems like it's really starting to click a little bit more than it had previously. You know, the 6 runs against Georgia, they really put it on Alabama, and especially that second game. But they scored 7 runs in the first game, and then defensively, I thought the third game against Alabama they were really good. How much do you want to put into the UAPB game? It's a little bit, obviously that's a game you expect to go out and win with a crooked number in your favor. But, you know, the offense is really starting to come around. I mean, I think that the, you know, like you said, the aggressiveness on the base run or on the bases is really starting to show, and it's being really effective, right? It's putting them into good positions, you know, with you know, getting runners in the scoring position with, you know, yeah, with the firepower that they're starting to show and, you know, at the plate as well. So, yeah, no, it's, you know, they're starting to play really well. I mean, you know, one more win against Georgia, and that's their third top 10 series win against in SEC play. So, I mean, you know, it's, you know, especially having, you know, that previous, I think it was a 5-game losing streak as well when things started to look.
Isn't it amazing how fast this can turn around? I mean, because every game I update on our site, the, you know, a whole list of stuff for each game, pitchers, forecasts, records, different things, stats. And one of the things I keep track of is, like in the old, I don't know if you ever, did you ever read a newspaper? Like when you were younger, did you, like you actually, you pulled open the newspaper and you read the sports page.
Yeah, especially, I mean.
You read the agate, the standings and the.
I never looked at the agate all that often.
So see, I did. When I was a kid, you know, like in the summertime, especially whenever I didn't have school, I would pull the newspaper out, you know, and it's like, hey, you know, and I'm just poring over everything. What are what are the Braves doing? What are the Cardinals doing? What are the Rangers doing? And
Cardinals are above 500.
I for now.
Let me have my piece.
Yeah. The one of the things I was always most interested in was the winning streaks and how they had done in their last 10. Mm-hmm. And so I tracked the last 10. And last week there was a point where I think in their last 10. They were either 2-8 or 3-7. I think 3-7 is what they were. Now all of a sudden, like that, it flips and they're 7-3. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how fast this thing can flip in baseball. But I love the aggressiveness. I like aggressive baseball. I like teams that are going to run. I like teams that are going to bunt runners. You know, I like hit and runs. You know, I like putting pressure on the team that's in the field. Mm-hmm. And I thought last night against Volchko, there was a probably my favorite call of the night was they get two runners on. I think it's a walk and a walk in the fourth inning, maybe a single and a walk. I think it was a single and a walk. And they square Mike Anew to bunt. Mm-hmm. And he does, and they take off anyway. It's a double steal. And I think he would have bunted had he had a pitch to bunt. But they weren't going to wait to move the runners based on that. They liked what they saw from you know something Volchko was doing. So it's a straight double steal, and now all of a sudden you got runners at second and third with nobody out. It just it totally changed how that game was going. And I love the aggressiveness. They're a team that you know they've got some offensive limitations when it comes to hitting. So they're hitting better, but what they're doing is they're doing a really good job of getting base runners on, and then they're being awfully aggressive. And this is kind of what I think they built this team to do. It's what they thought they had built last year's team to do, and then last year they hit 127 home runs. So you don't have to run a whole lot because you don't want to run yourself out of an inning. This year, I think all that athleticism that they built or that they recruited and they assembled, I think that what you're seeing in the last couple of weeks is really kind of what they thought that could all look like. And it's paying off for them. You know, we'll see if they can beat Georgia. They've got to win another one to take the series this weekend. But I think anytime you can take game one,
gives
that's
you a
big
chance,
deal. And especially when you can take game one at home.
Yeah.
I think that's just a huge deal. I'd love to see the splits of what it looks like when a home team takes game one relative to them winning the series. I have to assume that's a really high percentage. And we'll see if they can do it. They're going to play 6:00 tonight. Over at Baum Walker Stadium, and they'll play tomorrow afternoon over there as well. Cole Gibler is going to get the ball for the Razorbacks tonight. He'll be pitching against Dylan Vieg, and you might remember that name. He was the starting pitcher for Michigan when they played Arkansas down in Arlington in 2024. So kind of the transfer portal strikes again. You see guys now. Three different places. We're going to talk about transfer portal here with Razorback basketball. One quick note, Razorback softball game against OU this afternoon has been pushed to a 5:30 start time. It's no longer going to be televised by ESPN2. It's just going to be on SEC Network Plus. This is the biggest softball game in the or series in the country this weekend. Oklahoma ranked number one, playing at home in Norman. Arkansas ranked number 6, a huge, huge opportunity for Courtney Dyfel's team. Ethan Westerman is in Norman, and he'll be covering that for us. Maybe dodging an Oklahoma thunderstorm or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, dodging some rain. Yeah,
yeah. He knew what he was. Hey, when he saw it, it's April 17th. Mm-hmm. He knew what he was driving into. he knew. He's not new to this.
Yeah. The thunderstorms here, they're in this general area. They can.
Yeah, but in Oklahoma.
And then they also can kind of.
Oklahoma City metro area is the mother of all thunder. I mean, you know, like Ethan and I were talking earlier, and, you know, he said, you know, do they really think it's going to storm that early? I'm like, Ethan, you are going to a city with the, like, world-class meteorologists. Like, literally, the National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center is in Norman, Oklahoma. You know, OU is, like, kind of the, at least when it comes to thunderstorm study, like, it is the place to go get your meteorology degree. I'm going to trust them over your Weather Channel app. But, yeah, so Arkansas and OU, that'll be really interesting to see how this plays out this weekend for Courtney Dyfe. Also, the softball team announced today that they have added a game next Wednesday over in Tulsa. So they'll play TU, a pretty good softball team, too, over there on Wednesday night. Basketball, big week for the Razorbacks. They get two transfer commitments. We'll get to those in just a second. But really, I think the biggest news of the week is that Malik Thomas has announced he's going to put his name in the NBA draft. How do you hedge this? Because he's leaving his. The number of things you have to do to go into the draft, you know, it's like, I'm not saying Malik did this, but like so many times we're going to see guys, okay, I'm going to put my name in the draft, but I'm also going to retain my eligibility and I'm going to enter the transfer portal. Now, Malik didn't do the last step there, but he's left the door open for himself to come back. So I guess we're kind of at the point with him that he is testing the waters. Is this the proper term to use?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, He's a guy who I think for a long time it was pretty clear that he was going to, you know, at the very least, you know, test the waters, like you said. And, you know, he's earned that, right? I mean, he averaged over 15 points a game this season on good volume and good shooting percentage as well. And, you know, he's a guy who, you know, in any other draft class, I don't think he would have to maintain his college eligibility, because I don't think there would be much a question that he would be going into the NBA. But this year's draft class is, you know, really deep, really talented, and a lot of it is, you know, guys in his freshman class. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how, you know, where it all plays out. Right now he's kind of projected in that late first, early second round kind of area, which is where a lot of guys, when they're projected in that, I guess, zone, if you will, those are the guys who, you know, are the ones who have to really kind of sit down and consider, do I want to go, do I want to stay? And, you know, interestingly enough, I mean, that's just kind of where he's kind of slotted. And, you know, as the you know, the combine comes around, you know, he can play himself, you can play himself, you know, closer to the lottery and everything like that. We've seen that in the past with guys like, you know, Cedric Coward, you know, went from, you know, just kind of this completely unknown prospect to a lottery pick. And then, you know, kind of Jalen Williams for the Oklahoma City Thunder went to Santa Clara, Jalen Williams, not Arkansas, Jalen Williams, you know, went from, you know, being a, you know, 3-star prospect in high school to a lottery pick. You know, it's harder for a guy like Malik Thomas to have a rise like that in the NBA draft kind of list, because he's a pretty known commodity, just because, you know, he's played on really high level AAU circuits. You know, he went to a overtime elite. So NBA scouts, they know him. They know, you know, what he's good at, where they kind of want to see him, I guess, grow or improve upon. So it would be harder for a guy like Malik Thomas to kind of rise into that kind of echelon, if you will, but not impossible. But then the other side of it is, you know, even if Malik Thomas were to be taken late in the first, early in the second, he's shown enough that in all likelihood he would have a guaranteed contract. You know, he wouldn't have to necessarily go earn a contract in the summer league, though, I mean, obviously he'd play some in the summer league if he were to get drafted, just because that's what everybody does. But everybody who's healthy, I should say. But, you know, so there's all sorts of different angles to look at with Malik Thomas, because, you know, do you return to school, chance it, go into the draft next year in a weaker class? But, you know, sometimes that doesn't really work out. I mean, you look at this year's draft, it's kind of worked out for, you know, Yaxel Lendeborg at Michigan, Thomas Hauke at Florida. You know, didn't really work that way for a ton of other guys. Obviously, this year's draft class is much better on paper and, you know, as of now, than next year's. But, you know, do you chance that and try to play your way into the lottery for next year? Or do you, you know, just kind of take the what is in all likelihood going to be a guaranteed deal no matter where you land in this year's draft class? You know, so it's an interesting thing to watch and monitor. And yeah,
I think 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I would say Malik Thomas was for sure gone.
Yes.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that there could be a window there, mm-hmm. where, and I'm not talking about, this is no inside knowledge or anything. I'm just saying that it seems like when you have a player who's in his situation, there could be a window of opportunity to go, if you're Arkansas's coaching staff, and re-recruit him and say, look, here is what we are going to do for you next year. We're going to build the offense around you, mm-hmm. and here's where we think you could get to. And it's interesting you mentioned Thomas Hauke. I mean, he just announced yesterday he's going back to Florida for another mm-hmm. year.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of money right now in college basketball where I think it's more beneficial maybe all around for a player to stay in college than to get the contract, but maybe toil around in the G League for a year or two. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting deal. And I mean, with Thomas Hauke, I mean, he's a guy who, you know, was a kind of borderline lottery. So I mean, Florida had to put together, you know, a nice package. And
what do you think? What do you think kind of package you're talking about there?
Money?
No. I mean, like how much?
Oh, a lot. I mean, you look at, you know, lottery deals and, you know, even like those kind of picks that are right after the lottery. I mean, those are still, you know, good deals as well. You know, and I think like the 18th pick in last year's draft was like a $4 million mm-hmm. guaranteed.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, like maybe $3-4 million.
Yeah,
that you're guaranteeing these players, a high profile player to come back, maybe more.
Mm-hmm. I would say probably are in that range, especially in that kind of draft, I guess, area. So, yeah, it's an interesting one to, just kind of, I guess, monitor, you know, with him. Because, I mean, the timeline to start to earn that second contract is a, you know, it's a huge deal. And you've heard, you know, John Calipari talk about, you know, that kind of stuff in the past as well. So how quickly does he want to start, you know, that, I guess, timeline? You know, Malik Thomas to me is one of the most interesting guys in this draft to watch and monitor, just to see what he does, just because, you know, he would get a guaranteed deal. He would be on an NBA team in all likelihood, of course, if he were to stay in the draft, no matter if he was late first, early second. But then, you know, like we mentioned, you know, he theoretically could improve his draft stock if he were to go into next year's draft, even though it, you know, obviously would be a risk and it would be difficult, you know. So, but, you know, he can maybe play more on the ball. Maybe he mm-hmm. could, you know, it show that he's a better rim finisher than what some, because that's one of the areas of concern with him for NBA scouts is rim finishing, you know. So maybe he goes and shows that he's a better rim finisher at the college level than maybe is perceived. But yeah, he's a very interesting one to monitor and watch and see all of that. So I'm intrigued, if nothing else.
So Arkansas got two commits this week: Jeremiah Wilkinson from Georgia, Cooper Bowser from Furman.
Mm-hmm.
What stands out to you about these two? And when you look at who they've got now, what are the, and I know there's a lot of areas of need, maybe not say what are the areas of need left, what areas of need do these two fill?
Yeah, so I think starting with Jeremiah Wilkinson, I mean, he's a guy who, you know, he's a versatile guard. He can play on the ball. He can play off the ball. I personally think he's a little better off the ball than on the ball. I mean, you look at his assist to turnover ratio; it's pretty even. You know, his assist numbers aren't super high, but you know, he's a really good shooter. You know, he's a high volume shooter who shoots at a high level. And then when the shot isn't falling, which sometimes that's going to happen with a guy who takes a lot of shots like he does, he finds other ways to win. You know, he's an aggressive on-ball defender. He had the highest steal rate on Georgia's team. And though, I mean, Georgia wasn't the world's greatest defensive team by any means, that's still, you know, something to monitor, is that he's a guy who was, you know, I think it was a 3.3% steal rate, which was the highest on Georgia and also was top quarter in the country for all players. So he's a guy who's aggressive. He can pick guys up full court. He can play both man and zone. You know, he's a little bit small at 6'1", listed 6'1". So, you know, they like to add inches to that height. I never took advantage of that. I was honest in my college soccer listing. I said 5'9", and maybe I should have said 5'11", 6'6", even. I was always taught to be honest. But not to say, I mean, obviously there's reasons they do that. But, you know, he's a guy who he immediately fills a couple of different holes. I mean, he can play as a primary ball handler. So you lose Darius Acuff in all likelihood. I know he hasn't officially declared, but let's be honest. You'll lose DJ Wagner. So he's a guy who can fill that ball handling role. And then he can also fill that off ball role that, you know, should Malik Thomas stay in the draft, you know, that's something that he can fill in. And, you know, DJ Wagner played off the ball as well this season, and, you know, he could fill that role as well. At,
it's a good 3-point shooter.
Yes, very good.
37%, I think, this year.
Yeah, he's a solid 3-point shooter, and then I think he's at his best when he's driving. So when he, you know, catch and drive, catch and shoot, you know, he can do both of those things. So I think that's kind of the role that he fills. And, you know, I was asked recently, like, you know, does his commitment maybe mean that Malik Thomas is for sure staying in the draft? I wouldn't say so for sure, just because he's a guy who, or you know, Jeremiah Wilkinson is a guy who, you know, came off the bench the last eight games of Georgia for Georgia last season, was the ACC Sixth Man of the Year at Cal the year before that. So, I mean, he's comfortable in an off the bench role. So I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, his commitment means anything with regard to Malik Thomas. So I think that's an important caveat as well, just to mention. And then Cooper Bowser, I think, you know, he's a guy who, you know, he immediately fills, I think, you know, if nothing else, a depth piece in the front court. You know, he's a guy who, you know, he's got really good height. You know, he's 6'11", you know, he's got about a 7-foot-ish wingspan. You know, he needs to add some muscle to him. He's listed at 215. I think he's probably closer to 230 now. You know, so you want to see him add some muscle, because he did struggle a bit more against, you know, bigger and more physical front court players this season for Furman. But he's a guy who, you know, he's got not perfect hands, but his hands have gotten a lot better throughout his college career. You know, that's something that they worked with him a ton on at Furman for his 3 years there. You know, he's a guy who's a lob threat. He's a guy who, you know, is a good finisher around the basket. You know, he's a decent rebounder as well. And this past season at Furman, which isn't something that you would have seen his freshman or sophomore year, a lot of Furman's offense was initiated through him. Mm-hmm. A lot of Furman's offense started with him atop the key distributing, as opposed to, or, you know, before he went into the paint, as opposed to, you know, getting it to, you know, Alex Wilkins, for example, immediately, you know, who's, you know, he's another guy who's in the portal and is going to command a nice, somebody good is going to get Alex Wilkins out of the portal from Furman. But, you know, he's, you know, Cooper Bowser, I always want to say Cooper Boozer. so much Boozer talk.
The third Boozer.
Yeah. so I need to always catch myself before I do that. But, you know, with him, like I mentioned, you know, he's a guy who you need to see him get better against bigger and more physical big men and front court players, which he's going to see a lot of in the SEC.
Does it not feel a lot like Nick Pringle?
A little bit. I think he's a more maybe polished offensive all-around player than Nick Pringle was.
But just in terms of size, needing to be more physical in the paint.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and maybe he's not the same defensive presence that Nick Pringle is, you know, though he's, you know, he's capable of getting up and blocking shots. And, you know, he's really, throughout his college career, improved a lot on, you know, staying straight up and avoiding fouls. You know, I think this season he, I don't think he fouled out once this season, if I'm not mistaken, Cooper Bowser. So, I mean, that's something that is going to be important, right? You don't want to see your bigs get into foul trouble. And he only, I don't think, if memory serves correctly, he ever had more than three fouls in a game
this
season.
He had four in one game. Okay. Four against Elon. I'm looking right here. But he only had 51 fouls all season long.
Yeah, which is good. So he's a guy who, you know, he's improved as a rim protector. You know, he's a guy who's a willing defender who doesn't get into foul trouble a ton and, you know, has become a more polished offensive player as well. But you need to see him play better against bigger, more physical front court players because, and this wasn't just on him, but, you know, in that UConn game in the first round, Furman, you know, had UConn on the ropes for a long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of that game ended up going UConn's way because Terrace Reed had 31 points and 27 rebounds.
Amazing. I thought it was a typo whenever I saw that late in the game.
Yeah, which, I mean, it was an incredible performance from Terrace Reed, and, you know, don't take anything away from, you know, a good St. Louis boy. always got to throw the plugs in. But, yeah, but that's just kind of an example. And like I mentioned, that wasn't all on him. But, you know, he needs to be better against, like I said, bigger and more physical front court players. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's going to be a focus for him in the summer.
By the way, if you don't know, if you're just like now learning these names, I'll give you the measurables here. Cooper Bowser, 6'11", 215 is what he's listed as. Although, as you heard Anthony say, he's probably bigger than that now. He was a junior this year. He's from Woodbridge, Virginia. Played high school basketball at Sunrise Christian in Kansas. He's listed as a forward for Furman, and then Jeremiah Wilkinson listed as a 6'1". They don't put weight on the Georgia men's basketball roster.
I've always found
roster.
That fascinating. Some teams like a women's do, basketball other teams roster. Don't. It's like, I don't know what's going on here.
You don't get weights on the women's basketball rosters, but this is one of the few men's rosters, I think, that you see that. 6'1", though, is what he's listed as. He was a sophomore this year. As Anthony mentioned, he began his career at California, and he's from Powder Springs, Georgia, 6'1" guard for the Bulldogs this year. We're still waiting to see what happens with Billy Richmond. Mm. We're still waiting to see what happens with Malik Ewan. I think he tweeted about a month ago that an announcement was coming. The announcement,
announcement,
I think,
has
is
come.
it's still coming, I guess. Yeah. It's just
it's lost in the mail.
Things happen.
You know, sometimes the postal service, you know, it gets mixed up. Other times, if it's, you know, you're ordering with Amazon, maybe something got messed up. I don't know, but
I think I've told this story before. I did some contracted work for an organization here about a year and a half ago, and it'd been about they're usually real fast about, you know, getting you paid. It'd been like a month. I'm like, where? And so I called them. Oh yeah, we mailed that a month ago. Like a check took 4 weeks to get 3 miles, basically. So that's what you're dealing with.
We
with
all
the
move at our
sometimes.
Own pace.
Yeah, that's like that takes snail mail to a new to a new level. Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen with you, and it feels. I don't know if I want to even say that. There's that year that he could potentially get.
Yeah, from the JUCO year.
I guess I would be a little surprised if he was not angling to try to get that year. Now, is that year going to be at Arkansas? Is that year going to be somewhere else? I don't know. You know, I certainly think that Arkansas would probably like to have him back based on the way he played down the stretch.
Absolutely,
it just seems like, you know, with like you saw Owen Heineke, the tight end at OU yesterday, went to, you know, like he got a court ruling in Oklahoma that basically, you know, overrode an NCAA decision that gave him an extra year of eligibility. It just feels like, again, because the money is what it is for high-level college athletes, that it's going to be surprising to me if Ewan does not try to get that extra year of eligibility somewhere. Because I don't – and when I say pro player, he's not an NBA player. Mm. I'm sure he could go to some professional league somewhere. There's so many of them, and he could make some money. But, again, like outside of the NBA, is it really any better than what you can do, you know, at a high-level Division I basketball team right now? Mm. I I have to believe that it's probably not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm imagining that, you know, if assuming everything goes the way I'm sure he wants it to and how Arkansas wants it to, I would imagine Malik Ewan would be back. Obviously, we're awaiting that.
Did you follow his Instagram awaiting the announcement? Or were you already
following? Do you remember? We were in Springfield covering the baseball game, and I was just like, I haven't refreshed Malik Ewan's Instagram page in a while. So I would just open my phone. And I would just
Nor had I.
It was like at least every like 15 to 30 minutes, I would be like, I got to look. Because he tweeted earlier that day that an announcement was coming soon, and then it just didn't come.
Well, soon, so. that's ambiguous. I mean, it's... Soon to you might be different than soon to somebody
else. That's true, yeah. I mean, everybody moves at their own pace.
Yeah.
That's the theme of the episode.
So
life goes on.
There were some names that we talked about a week or so ago that Arkansas had contacted who we thought they were, you know, really interested in, who have gone elsewhere. Mm. And, you know, really the one that I think was the most notable was Samto Cyril, who we thought Arkansas had a pretty decent chance with. He had committed to John Calipari when he was at Kentucky, played for Georgia this year, real good. We talked about him a lot on our show a week or so ago. He's going to go to Miami, which Miami, it seems like a lot of times in this NIL era, Miami's kind of been that team that, you know, they continually try to make a run at it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always work for them, but, you know, they certainly, they've got some money to spread around, and they do it.
Yeah, no, I think Jay Lucas, you know, had a really nice year one there, you know, taking over for Jim Larrañaga, and got to the second round of the tournament. And yeah, I mean, they look good. I mean, not only did they get Samto Cyril, and were already a pretty good defensive team, but they also went out and got a Caden Lewis from Villanova. And yeah, I mean, they're looking good. Mm-hmm. I like the way, you know, Miami is looking. And you know, it's not just good for Miami that, you know, Miami looks like it's going to be a good team. It's good for the ACC after the ACC had a couple of down years, started to trend back in the right direction last year. And now, yeah, it looks like they're going to have some good teams as well. So, yeah, I like the way the Miami team looks. But you know, with regard to Samto Cyril, you know, kind of a player who I think Arkansas was missing big time this past season.
Oh, yeah.
Was – you know, an elite, not just elite rim protector, but elite rebounder as well. So back to the drawing board, I guess. And
they're still missing it.
Yeah.
You know, like Mohamed Silla was another who we had heard his name connected with Arkansas from Georgia Tech. He's going to West Virginia. Boy, it's like the current state of things has diversified, I feel like, the rosters so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it's now – you know, where can you go? And I'm not saying that money is the number one only driving factor, although I think it is for most players.
Mm.
You know, there might be things that they like about these schools. Maybe they do like the business school or something. Who knows? Probably not. But like the business of the school. But, you know, it's like it's really like you can, if you've got a little bit of money to spend, you can go out and get yourself a good player or two.
Mm.
You know, and I know West Virginia, they got some basketball acumen to them. But, you know, I guess when I see like a big time prospect go to West Virginia, it's still a little bit surprising to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, Ross Hodge also in year two, they just won the crown, you know, so.
Who could forget?
I mean, hey, Nebraska won the crown and then made the Sweet 16. So maybe, and started, what, 20-0? So.
What, the crown? That is that the.
That's the Fox Sports one. Like the Fox,
so there's
Sports
still the NIT.
The NIT, yeah.
Are the other ones still in business? Like the CBI?
The CBI exists, but it did not get played this year. So I worry about the future of the CBI.
Keeps you up at night,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, Illinois State might be the final CBI champion, which would be wild.
The crown.
But, you know, like, yeah, West Virginia's got some good, you know, acumen as well. And, you know, they're another team that's putting together some nice pieces that I'm intrigued by. But, yeah, another guy who, you know, would have been, you know, he's a guy who, you know, not only, you know, is he a good presence inside, you know, had a nice freshman season, but he's also a guy who can spread the floor a little bit, you know, has a little bit of a three-point shot. And, you know, it's nice to have that versatility.
Mm-hmm.
And, Yeah. Now it's, I guess, yeah, like we said, back to the drawing board.
And Isaiah Johnson was another. We talked about the point guard from Colorado. He's going to Texas.
Texas is putting together a team.
Yeah.
Texas, yeah, obviously everybody knows that Texas has, you know, really nice resources. I mean, that's why Sean Miller left a really good job at Xavier to go to Texas. And, you know, it's, yeah, they're putting together a nice roster. Like I don't do any preseason rankings until, like, June. Just because I don't want to, I see
you make
all
it
these.
Sound like, you
see,
make it sound like you're not outrageously out front in front of all this. I mean, June. You know what I'm thinking about college basketball?
October, November.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
but I see all these like way too early top 25s, and I'm like, LSU has zero players.
That's
on
what I think about yours
right
when
now.
It comes out in June. Way too early. Yeah,
because it is way too early. But yeah. You know, it's still like, I mean, like. LSU has very literally zero players on its roster right now. Maybe that Will Wade puts together a squad and it's top 25 and you're not even looking at LSU right now. Or, you know, Kansas has lost, you know, pretty much everybody from its roster.
Yeah.
You think Kansas isn't going to be a top 25 team come November? I mean, maybe it won't, but, you know, it's too early to say is basically what I'm trying to say. But Texas is putting together a really nice team. Looks like Matas Vokatidis is going to stay as well. So, yeah, Texas and Isaiah Johnson going there, you know, that's a squad right there. So, yeah.
Flory Badunga leaving KU, going to Louisville. Mm-hmm. His new front court mate is going to be Carter Knox.
Yeah.
That was announced this week, too. Mm-hmm. What's Arkansas lose with Carter Knox? And what have they got to find to – be able to replace him, because he didn't give him a whole lot this year. Mm. But there were two versions of Carter, maybe three versions of Carter Knox. There was the version that you saw. There was like a version that felt like it was injured a lot of times. And then there was like this third version that you never quite got to. Like there was the appeal or the ceiling of Carter Knox, that it just never felt like he was ever anywhere close to this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, you saw it at moments. I mean, the Texas Tech game, I thought he was awesome in that game and, you know, had a really nice game against, you know, Central Arkansas, who turned out to be, you know, a pretty good team, won the ASUN regular season and was an overtime period away from the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you're losing a guy who, at the very least, gives you some nice depth at the wing spot. You know, and it's versatile as well, could play the four, maybe even play the two if you're playing a really big lineup. But you're losing a guy with, you know, who gave you a lot of, I guess, depth, but also a guy who, you know, had some nice potential as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and sometimes, you know, stuff like this, maybe it's best for everybody involved to get that change of scenery. You know, I think Louisville is another team that's, you know, really putting together what looks to be a pretty good team, you know, with Flory Badunga, with Carter Knox, with Jackson Shellstad coming from Oregon. So, you know, it looks like he's going into a good situation. And, yeah, you know, he's a guy who you lose his, you know, the depth he provides, you lose the potential he has. I think those are the two things that immediately jump out from an Arkansas standpoint. And then for my standpoint, I guess just as the you know, impartial reporter of it. You know, I enjoyed talking to Carter Knox. He was always a, you know, a nice guy, and
he let us take pictures of him with chickens.
Yeah, he did let us take pictures. Yeah, for the basketball preview. So that was fun, and he was always
a good sport, if nothing else.
Yeah, no, he was always you know, pleasant to talk to. So I'll miss covering him and all of that. But I think the biggest thing that you look at with him from an Arkansas perspective and what you're losing is the wing depth. And you know, is that something that you're going to go out in the portal to try to get? Because you've got potentially Billy Richmond coming back, mm-hmm. you know, which, you know, he's another guy who I would expect to maybe test the NBA draft waters, but I would think he would probably come back to school because, you know, he's similar to Malik Thomas in a sense that, you know, he's not an unknown quantity. Mm-hmm. So how much are you going to go and improve your draft stock? Which, again, not impossible. But, you know, what NBA scouts want to see more from him isn't a secret. It's a more developed jump shot, more shooting range. Because, I mean, he's got pretty much everything else that you would want. Mm-hmm. But the NBA is, you know, such a jump shot heavy league that you want to see that further develop. So he's somebody I would expect to be back. You know, you get Isaiah Seely back, you know, so you're maybe going to be banking on him to, you know, take that next step and be ready to be, you know, a full rotational player. You get JJ Andrews coming in, yeah, who can play in that spot. So there's, you've got depth there. So do you go and maybe try to get another guy from the portal who can add more depth to the wing? Because, you know, as good as JJ Andrews is, do you, you know, there's always a jump, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think that he's ready to be a rotational player, but you can never certainly say that with a freshman, you know, as confident as you can be. And then Isaiah Seely, I thought you saw the flashes of a guy with a lot of potential throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And is he ready to take that step? So I think that's an interesting question. I don't think a wing addition is, you know, the number one thing that they need. I think that's obviously going to be in the front court. But it's something to monitor with Carter Knox's departure.
One of the things we haven't talked about is, this is a couple of weeks old now, but we haven't had a chance to discuss it. They're going to play Michigan State, it looks like, in Detroit, mm-hmm, on Thanksgiving. And the Thanksgiving part, that's not a surprise. The fact that it's going to be on the neutral side is not a surprise. They've gotten huge television numbers the last 2 years because of riding the coattails of the NFL into a game. They played the most watched regular season college basketball game in 32 years against Duke, mm-hmm, because, in part, the Cowboys-Chiefs game on Thanksgiving was the most watched NFL game ever in the regular season. Not a bad lead-in to your, you know, on Thanksgiving to your game. So, you know, they'll get one of these again. It looks like it's going to be the Lions game that, mm-hmm, that they're going to trail, and they're going to play in Detroit against Michigan State. That's going to be a road game. Anytime you play Michigan State in Detroit, that's a road game for you.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it's, this is what they're going to do. I guess really the question is like how many people show up to it? Mm. Remember when they played Illinois in Kansas City a couple of years ago, there weren't very many people there at all. Like maybe, yeah, 4,000, 5,000, something like that. And, you know, even at the United Center last year, it was not a packed crowd, mm-hmm, that they played in front of, although there were more people there for that than the Illinois game. So it's a made for TV deal. Mm-hmm. It's not made for fans, but again, you're playing Michigan State in Detroit. You know, you're probably going to get a much, this is probably going to be the biggest attendance, I would guess, that they've played in front of, and then certainly the most you know, hostile crowd, I guess, if you will, that they're going to see in one of these neutral side events. Mm-hmm. And then looks like Michigan State's going to, they were supposed to come to Bud Walton Arena next season. Mm-hmm. They're going to reschedule that trip to Fayetteville for another year down the road.
Yeah, looks that way. But yeah, I remember being a little surprised when I saw that, because, you know, the news came from Tom Izzo on the radio, and I was like, I wonder if he misspoke, because I was just like kind of jarred that they would play what is essentially a road game instead of what was supposed to be a home game. But I mean, I'm sure they're getting a nice paycheck for
it. They'll get
a
big paycheck. Oh, yeah. So, will that be CBS this year?
I think
it's CBS, yeah, that'll be contracted.
So there. Yeah, they'll get the paycheck for it, and I'm sure, obviously, they felt it was worth, you know, not having that marquee.
It's
home
great
game
exposure.
And, yeah. Oh yeah.
Like if win or lose, it's great exposure for your team, mm-hmm, to be able to play in front of that many people. I mean,
yeah,
I can only imagine what that game on Thanksgiving that Cameron Boozer did for what everybody knows about Cameron Boozer this year. Mm. He was awesome that game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Darius Acuff was pretty good that game. You know, it was a way to kind of, hey, here's who we are this year. Check back when football season's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, I ton of people will watch, and it'll be fun. I've never been to Detroit, so I'm looking forward to that. It's right across the bridge from Canada. So
I'm
maybe
aware.
I think I've mentioned my little scratch off map that I've got in my room. I've never been to Canada,
so maybe
I'll just walk across the bridge so I can scratch off Canada.
I don't think it's as easy as walking across.
Well, I mean,
the bridge.
I'll have my passport, yeah, and I'll just like,
you know, I went to Canada back in the days when you did not have to have a passport to go to Canada.
Oh, okay.
Like when I went to Canada 20 something years ago, we went to Niagara Falls. Mm. And so you could go to Canada without a passport and you could get back into the US if you had a driver's license.
There we go.
Times have changed. Yes, let's not go down that road. But
yes, they have. Yeah. But I want to scratch off Canada, my scratch off map, and maybe get a little stamp in the passport. But I've never been to Canada.
I bet you can do
and
that.
Toronto is a 12-hour drive from St. Louis, and I've just never done it. It's the same distance to Denver, and I've ridden to Denver with a group of friends of mine from college. But yeah,
Michigan State, that's the only game we know about so far this year, right?
That and ACC-SEC challenge against Team TBD, which I'm imagining will be a road game because they had the home game against Louisville.
That would be the expectation.
I have a theory.
What's that?
I theorize, let me be abundantly clear, I don't know this for sure, that it would be North Carolina. That's my theory because North Carolina played a road game this year in the ACC-SEC challenge. Arkansas played a home game. You know, Calipari in Arkansas.
It's the return for Chuck Martin. It's they get Chuck Martin. Arkansas gets.
I think that's the draw.
Actually, that wouldn't that just work out for North Carolina? They get a coach and a home game.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound too good.
No, but I wonder, that is just a theory.
Hey, I wonder what Tua happens with it. Remember, they played Baylor in Dallas a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Baylor was supposed to come to Fayetteville. It never happened. But I don't think the contract ever got canceled. And so I wonder if that's a game that's potentially possible, lingering out there.
Maybe,
I don't know if
maybe
it is,
that's
but
the
I wonder.
Maybe that's the marquee home game that
could be. You got to have at least one.
Oh yeah.
And if it's not going to be the ACC-SEC challenge game, then it's got to be one that you go out and you independently schedule.
Yeah.
And now they lose Michigan State.
Maybe
they got to find something.
Scott Drew, step on up.
Yeah. Well, he stepped on back last year. They didn't know anything. They wanted to be a part of Arkansas.
They did stink last year. So, that is for sure. But
all right.
Yeah.
Anthony, appreciate you coming here. You can read all of Anthony's basketball coverage. He does a great job for us at wholehogsports.com. Again, hope that you'll subscribe to our podcast, whether it's on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening to us or watching us. We appreciate you being here. We'll have another show on Monday. Bubba Carpenter will be in studio here with me. We'll look back at the baseball series against Georgia, and we'll have plenty of coverage. Baseball, football, softball, you name it. If it's in season, it'll be on our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the weekend. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope to see you again here Monday.